Hi, everyone. Welcome to Flock Talk. I'm Erin Morgan.
And I'm Stacey Sage.
And we work for the members of the Ontario Sheep Farmers Organization.
This week, we welcome Ursina Studhalter to Flock Talk. Ursina has been a sheep farmer for 8 years in Western Quebec. She's here today to share her experience battling Métis Vizsla on her farm.
Welcome, Ursina. Thanks for joining Flock Talk. We know that this isn't an easy story to share. We appreciate you joining us today to talk about your experiences and your learnings. Can you give us a little background? What brought you to sheep farming?
Hi, Stacey and Erin. Thank you so much for having me. Funny story. I wanted to milk dairy goats and I couldn't afford a farm where you can get a milk truck for those. So we looked at alternatives and ended up with sheep. Very specifically hair sheep, because we wanted the closest thing to a meat goat. I know it's treated as a joke, but that is what happened. So we bought sheep in 2016. At that point, we were still farming in Huron County, so southwestern Ontario. And then by 2017, we relocated to western Quebec, the Pontiac. It's near Renfrew, so in terms of business marketing, everything goes through Ontario still, but we moved to Quebec because it was more affordable for us. And we have somewhere around 220 ewes at this stage. And we built a barn in 2018 and we have a reasonable size of land. I think it's about 65 workable. So, and it's fully confined, which will be relevant later in the conversation. So that's what our farm is. It's me and my husband and now our son. So that's your background.
That sounds great.
Thank you. Every story has to start somewhere. Can you walk us through the initial signs or symptoms that led you to suspect something was wrong with your flock?
So we had a lot of dead sheep, way more dead sheep than we thought we should have. So when we got into sheep, we bought a very neglected flock during a drought period. Those bounced back pretty good. We had nearly perfect lambing, like no mortality. It was a pretty good start. And then things got progressively worse. So after we moved we moved in 2017. By spring 2018, we had lost a third of the sheep we had originally moved with. So we moved up here with about 130 ewes, and we were barely scratching 100 ewes by that summer. And this was not culls. They were just dead. And they were dying of things that we couldn't figure out. So we had a water problem. We solved the water problem. They're still dying. At one point, we added more sheep and switched up our feed. You know, we went through all the management steps, but every management step wasn't making progress. And our sheep were dying of what we thought was listeriosis. And that made no sense because we came from a dairy background. So we kind of knew we were doing the feed quality, so it shouldn't be happening. But we just thought sheep were more susceptible because this is at this point, I get annoyed when people say sheep are always looking for ways to die, because it turns out that's not true. They're probably sick. So we just had a lot of dead ewes, and our lamb performance, despite investing in better genetics, better nutrition, they were going backwards. So we were retaining upwards of 100 ewe lambs a year and could never get past about 220 ewes. So that gives you an idea of just how severe the problem was. So we had had some random testing before that where our vet was like, well, maybe it's MV. It's starting to look like you have some kind of chronic problem. So 2022, MAPAC had a study. MAPAC is OMAFRA's equivalent in Quebec, where they were looking for paratuberculosis, so that's yonis. But as part of participating in that study, you got free MV testing on every ewe that was sampled for the study. And they were offering a small amount of payment and just further guidance. So we were invited to participate because we had enough sheep. So we signed up. And the ewes got sampled that January, so January 2022. And in order to get your results, the free MV results and other results, you had to track all the deaths and calls and all the reasons you did those deaths and calls for the entire year. So we agreed to those conditions and said, yeah, we'll do that. Maybe we'll get some answers. And December rolls around 2022. We get the results back and right away they call and they go, hey, before you open your email, you know, make sure you're sitting down and you should probably call your vet, because out of the 45 randomly sampled ewes, 33 of them were positive for MV. And this is like a year. So it's been a year. So we go, okay, well, the logical approach is to remove the MV sheep. And we go through and go looking for them and we can't find them. They're dead. They're gone. We couldn't find, I think we found like two of them in the end. So we start looking at our notes and we had written beside, and most of these ewes were dead. We'd written beside died from listeriosis, died from listeriosis, died from some random other cause. And the extreme amount of listeriosis sheep or symptoms really tied back to the ones that had been tested positive. So long wrap up to that is we figured out that there's four symptom pools for MV. And we happen to be sitting in the one that it attacks their nervous system. So it looks like listeriosis in our flock, but it's not. It's probably MV. So bit of a fluke. We got invited to a study and suddenly found out why we had so many dead sheep. So give or take just over 50 dead ewes in 1 year alone that we tracked.
That. Wow. That is a wild ride. So that must have been pretty emotionally difficult to handle. How did you get through that? How did you stay sheep farming? At any point that you must have been thinking, when do we give up? When is this not working out? How did you make it all the way through and manage sort of the emotional impact of the whole thing?
So part of it was, by the time they invited us to that study, we were pretty sick of the whole situation. And the thing that was happening was every time we tried to go out to industry or peer information, about half of the responses we got were that we just had the wrong sheep, that if we would just finally give up on hair sheep, that would solve all our problems. If we went out and bought whatever breed was popular that week, that would solve our situation. So we went and we decided to participate in the study because we're like, maybe it'll give us answers. So by December, we sat there and we were like, okay, so now we have a choice. Either we solve this, start over, or we get out. Like, it was at that point no longer fun to go to the barn. It sucked. That year we lost so many lambs. I know this number will sound crazy to some people, but we had 18% mortality in our lambs and we're panicking. And we're like, this is not good. We can't have this. We were taking over 200 days to get our lambs to weight. And we were culling, like we thought we could cull our way out of whatever was going on. So we were culling upwards of 20 to 30% per lambing group, which helped, but it was just one of those situations where we knew we wanted to stay farming. We need our farm to run, to pay the bills. And for us, the choice came down to we like our sheep and we're going to figure out how to get them healthy again because it's not fun anymore. As my husband says, we could keep banging our head against a wall and keep hoping the same thing works, or we could make a really drastic, very expensive change. So, it was not fun. It was very terrifying, to be honest.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
What were the critical decisions you had to make once the diagnosis was confirmed?
So we had to decide, we kind of had a bit of a decision tree. So we could, in our case, because we were at that point pretty sad about the whole situation, we could get out. We could ignore the problem and just keep going, the head against the wall situation. We could repopulate entirely, basically sell everything and start over as we'd been advised to do multiple times, or we could participate in Quebec's programs. So this is one benefit to having this problem happen in this province, is Quebec is the only province that subsidizes the MV testing and going through the process. And we actually called a couple of breeders to find out what the cost was to buy in sheep. We would have had to switch breeds, which we were not happy to do. There's very few tested Katahdins in the country, and that would basically severely limit the opportunities we had. And the cost to repopulate was enormous. We wouldn't have been able to survive that in today's cull prices, maybe, but not at the time that we were making this decision. So we opted to, they gave us all the numbers, we opted to go the testing route because we said we can't keep doing what we have been doing. It's not working. And well, at that point, we were 6 years into it. Like, can't keep doing this. It's not going to work. So, and Quebec has a lot of examples of the program working for people. And I had already reached out to a couple of other people who were willing to talk about their experience, who told me what happened to them, told me how they dealt with it. And every single person that I talked to said it was better on the other side. They said, once you get through the testing, it's much better. It's worth it. So that was encouraging. And that was how we ended up doing it. We had to, you know, cut back some other plans that we'd had, but it felt important to fix what was wrong with the sheep first and foremost. And it was just way too much money to repopulate with the breeds that we like to work with. So we have, at this point, we've gone from Katahdin to, we've added in Dorper and we've added in Romanoff, both of which are extremely expensive in the grand scheme of things when you're talking about buying significant numbers of replacements.
So, so you talk about buying replacements. That's one change that you made, replacements of a different breed. How else have you changed your approach to flock management on a day-to-day basis in order to, are you trying to breed out the problem? Or are you trying to live with the problem and manage things day-to-day? Like what is the strategy now?
So, we didn't actually end up buying anything because it was way too much. They were quoting us over $500 a ewe, and that was more than, it works out to about $30 a year to test for us. So we tested, so we signed up for the program in January 2023. Then we had a 4-month period where we had to respect various quarantine and biosecurity protocol. We did those, and then we were testing late April 2023, and we tested the entire flock. And at that point, because of the people I had talked to, we had made the decision that every single positive ewe, as long as they were open, was immediately leaving the barn. So by May, what would it have been? Yeah, by May, we were loading up, it was probably over 50 ewes in one run just to get them out of the barn because they were positive. And then the program said after that we had to test again every 6 months. So we tested again in 4 to 6 months. So we tested again that fall, got rid of more sheep that were positive. And in between there, we did buy in some more rams from negative flocks, and we followed the quarantine protocol, which called for 2 negative tests within 90 days. But we took the slightly more expensive but faster route where we get rid of anything that is positive within a week of getting the test results. If they are bred or nursing, we put them outside or we put them in a random corner of some building that we have just to get them out of the flock as fast as possible. And doing that, we've gone, so by, we were already culling pretty heavily by the time we did the full flock test. The full flock test came in at 16% positive. And now, as of November, because that was our last test, we're down to 3% positive. And we're no longer seeing random dead sheep. Now our sheep die of normal sheep things like lambing complications and getting stuck in gates and weird things like that. Like your usual sheep deaths. And this was really cool. We went 7 months without needing a single bit of medication for our flock after we did that first big cull. So I hope that answers where we're at now.
How often are you testing now? Are you still on an every sort of 4 to 6 month testing
cycle? Yes. And it will be changing because the Quebec program is changing. So I'm still waiting on like final details there. But currently we're looking at probably testing again. So we tested November and we'll be testing again May 2025. And then they're changing some of the program rules. So we might be able to, and that's an entire flock test, but we might be able to move to a sample test if the results after May are acceptable. And they're now going to be offering retesting, which I'm looking forward to because now we're down to maybe 8 positives per test. It would be nice to retest some of those just to be absolutely confident that we're not getting a false positive. The rate's very, very low, but we've tested so many sheep that at this point it's possible that one or two might have been a false positive.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Oh, goodness. What a journey. I know we talked about you chatting with your veterinarian a little bit too. I'm wondering if you could share a bit about what conversations around the outbreak look like with your vet, further to that, suppliers and other farmers.
So we were always up front fairly early. We did sell breeding stock pre-2022, and we would tell people that we were not negative for MV and that it was kind of at their own risk. But we would usually like disclose any health problems and highlight that we were not negative for that one because our vet kept saying, you might have a problem. And most of those sales were ram lambs that were going to hobby farms who wanted to use them for half a season on pasture. So probably didn't get anybody super infected doing that. On top of that, when our vet was talking to us, he said, you have been having problems ongoing for years. We can't seem to get anywhere. And he had gone through the testing process with at least two other local flocks and had said the results were good and that he would, answer any questions. He was very good at translating and going over all the biosecurity things, which were not that complicated for us. Most of the biosecurity things are things we're familiar with. My husband grew up on a hog farm and so did I. So we were very familiar with biosecurity protocols and that's what we do now. If we're dealing with anybody else, we don't now ask for boots, clothing changes. We have people who do chores. They have clothes here or they have clothes that are designated for theirs. As soon as we knew we were positive, that was something we disclose. So we didn't sell any breeding stock again until this summer. And that person is aware of that we were testing. And they picked up their purchases right after a round of testing. So I'm reasonably confident saying they would have a much lower risk exposure than if you just bought commercial at this stage. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of how we deal with it. And our vet is very supportive in working around my work schedule, working around what we do. He had good advice on how we should set up testing days, how many people we had to get. So this is where you find out how many friends you have, because you need a lot of people on testing days because we're running well over 60 ewes a minute through that shoot just to get the testing done. So you need a lot of people helping keep those sheep moving and keeping the paperwork going. So we made some tech purchases to make that easier and less stressful. So I hope that was sufficient for that question?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So at the beginning, you talked a little bit about the financial impact that everything was having. And you had like 18% lambing losses and you lost a lot of ewes. And that must have had a pretty serious financial impact. And so the changes that you've made to rebuild after testing and to sort of bring your numbers back into a more normal range. What kind of, can you tell us a little bit more about the financial impacts or the financial picture now versus back when you were having those yet to be explained difficulties?
Yes. So it did improve. So when we tested that 2023, that April, we actually had over 350 qualifying animals who had to be tested in the barn. We ended that year with 190 adult ewes that had lambed. So that tells you how many positives were running around and just how much didn't survive. 2022 lamb prices were not quite as spectacular, slightly earlier. So the cost offset wasn't great. However, even though we had decreased the amount of animals that drastically, we sold more lambs that year than the previous year, and then more lambs again since. And now we've gone down to, our feed costs have greatly improved. 2023s were really hideous because we were just trying to keep everything alive. So now we're getting lambs out in some cases, less than 100 days. So that's 100 days of feed we're saving, which brings us more in line with where you want to be. Our rate of gain has improved drastically. We went from sometimes having as low as 0.2 of a pound a day, which sounds awful and is awful. Now we're back up to about 0.6, depending on the group, whether or not I opt to really feed them a lot of grain or not. We can push that as high as over a pound a day if we wanted to, if we grain them to that level. Usually we choose not to. We are spending easily $7,000 a year for testing, but because we're not spending that on feed, it's working out on the other side, and we're no longer losing nice genetics. So we have more ewe lambs this year than we've had in the last 2 years that actually are going to make it to lambing. So I've got, right now, there is 63 ewe lambs that are bred and due for February, March. It depends on the group. And that is much better than 2023, where we had a grand total of 31 ewe lambs that survived and made it to lambing. And that doesn't help when you're culling a whole bunch of sheep. Yeah. So it's improved there. And bottom line wise, this year should be the first year that we've made a noticeable profit, turned around and invested it right back into the farm. But it was a significantly better year, and we've managed to streamline many processes, and we're no longer burning through resources, if that makes sense. So we were surviving all right before that, but it's so much better. It's actually nice to go to the barn now. Our mortality's back under control. I don't have the 2024 number exactly yet, but I would say it's probably for the whole year, 12% or less. We have lambing groups where we're down to less than 5% losses.
Wow.
And we're no longer dragging dead ewes out every single week. It's more now it is lambing complications and occasionally some other illness, but you're not really dealing with dead stock anymore. And our lambs look very uniform now coming out of the barn. We just sold a group, and I was super excited that out of the 15 lambs that were sold, they were split into groups of 2 and 3. Every single group was within 4 pounds of each other, and they were all being paid within 10 cents of each other, like on the per pound basis.
That's great.
So it's a nicer animal. We've had to sacrifice our Katahdin genetics in the process, We still have them, but we will no longer be able to purchase more Katahdins because there's just not enough tested animals out there that we can source from. So we're switching to mostly Dorpers. And then we're really happy with our half Romanovs. They kind of saved us. If it weren't for the half Romanovs, I'm not sure we'd be having this conversation.
Wow.
We don't bottle lambs anymore. Well, we do, but it's like one bottle lamb right now, and it's because his mother died in labor. Ugh. And everything else is nursing. Even the triplets are nursing off of their dams. Like, there's our milk replacer costs are maybe 3 bags a year, sometimes a bit more. So, yeah.
Yeah, definitely offsets. Thank you for sharing those details. Now that you're on the other side, how do you envision the future of your farm post-outbreak? And are there any specific goals you're focusing on?
So post-outbreak, like I said, we definitely want to now build on the genetics side. I had a chance to attend the Napanee location for the OSF convention and was really inspired by the conversations Mark Ferguson sparked. So we really want to build on that side. I also attended some educational stuff to maybe deal with coccidia because our management there was not ideal. So I attended a course for that, learned a whole bunch. And now we're just making improvements to improve the genetics of our flock and the overall efficiency of the flock to a point where hopefully we will one day be able to offer our genetics maybe to other flocks. Like, I know they mentioned at the convention that somebody was doing genetic testing for a resistance against MV, and I'm very, very fascinated by that. So I'd like to explore that going forward. Those are sort of the changes we've made. We're still going to probably never be a purebred flock. Every time I try that, it just doesn't work out how I plan. So we'll always have some mix of Dorper or Romanov with the Katahdin that's still here mixed in, and the goal is to maintain a shedding flock that doesn't require shearing, grows well off of controlled diets, so we don't offer grain unlimited. It's all very calculated to bring out the maximum efficiency, and very long term is we'd like to maybe, you know, one day go outside of the barn and invest in fencing. We don't have that infrastructure. That's why we opted for confined, which then probably made the problem worse because MV spreads so much faster in a confined environment.
Mm-hmm. You've given us lots to think about today, so thanks very much. And if you were giving advice to other producers who are maybe in a similar situation to you or are just concerned and want to prevent Mativisna from being a problem on their farm, do you have any advice, anything that you want people to take away from your experience when they're starting their own farm or working with their own flock?
Yes. So at this point, I've gotten kind of fanatical about testing. If I hear of somebody who's interested in starting in sheep, my very first thing is I'm like, I don't care what breed you pick. I don't care what size, what management system you want to do. Please just start with negative sheep. It saves you so much. We could have saved so much heartbreak and money if we had just started with tested sheep from the beginning. And it allows you to eliminate all sorts of other ailments that might be treatable. Because MV is kind of this disease where it might not be MV that kills them, but it makes them more susceptible to everything else. On the flip side, for producers who are in it, if you're experiencing just ongoing issues and you feel like you're not making progress ever and you've done all the management things, it might be time to look at sampling a bunch of the ewes to see if they're positive, because you should really have productive 7-year-old ewes in your flock. And if they're not there, it's a pretty good indicator that MV might be floating around in your flock. And it's gotten to the point where I've walked people's sheep barn, looked at it, and then they go, "What do you think?" And I go, "I think I'm looking in a mirror about 3 years ago, and I think you have a problem." And that's really hard to tell somebody, but if you're feeding an extreme amount of grain and your sheep just aren't gaining weight, it could very well be MV. It's so prevalent in the area. One good thing right now is our call prices are spectacular. The 8 calls I had to send that were positive in November paid for over half of the testing. And that was just, that made me ecstatic. I was so excited. And it's just one of those things where if you're starting out, just start with negative sheep to begin with. Save yourself a whole bunch of headaches and problems, because it might not be that you might not be getting the results that you think you should be getting. And it's probably not a genetic problem. It could very easily be that you have MV that's limiting, because it limits you on so many things. It made us such susceptible to coccidiosis. It made us susceptible to, it's just all these little things fit into this puzzle piece. So that's usually at this point, I'm at the stage of like, are you a negative flock? If the answer is no, start there.
Ursina, thank you so much for joining us today on Flock Talk. If you would like to learn more from Ursina about the Mady Vizsna outbreak on her farm, you can read through her detailed and helpful articles on Substack under Farming Frontiers, which we will share on our Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube channels. Hey, Erin, what's new going on at OSF?
Well, I want to start the year off by saying happy 40th anniversary to the members of Ontario Sheep Farmers. So for a brief history recap, the idea to form a sheep marketing board in Ontario was put forward at the annual meeting of the Ontario Sheep Association in 1983. That led to the Minister of Agriculture appointing Jack James, Walter Renwick, and Garth Noecker to put together the framework of a marketing plan with the input of sheep producers from across the province. That led to the creation of the Ontario Sheep Marketing Agency in September 1985. In the late 80s, the Ontario Sheep Association and OSMA amalgamated, retaining Ontario Sheep Marketing Agency as the association's name. And then in the fall of 2017, the organization evolved again to become Ontario Sheep Farmers, enhancing visibility and engagement with stakeholders in the sheep value chain in Ontario and across Canada. So we'll have more historic highlights to share throughout the year in our social media, on this podcast, and in the Ontario Sheep News magazine. So stay tuned.
And thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode of Flock Talk, please subscribe through your podcast app to receive alerts to our future episodes. And please share our podcast with your friends.
For more Ontario Sheep Farmers content, follow us on social media at Ontario Sheep Farmers on Instagram and Facebook, at Ontario Sheep on X, and visit our website at ontariosheep.org. Thank you for listening.